This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
All right. Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We are live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street, right in downtown Manchester. Come on down, have some, it's a soup day today.
And, is it?
Brittany made a great tomato soup up in Midtown Cafe, so you can come to Midtown and you can come and watch the show. And also, you know, I'm not sure if you listeners have noticed, the lineup has changed a little bit. We have Jack Heath back in the morning, and Peter St. James moved his show from 9 to noon right before Food for Thought, mid-morning meltdown. I'm sure Peter must be, hope he's loving not having to get up so early, you know? I mean, maybe, does it take a while maybe to get used to that probably when you don't have to do it?
You know, I did it for 30 years, as you know, and it took me one day to get used to it. Yeah, one day, that's it.
That's funny. And then, of course, Kale and Company after Food for Thought.
So we're surrounded by really good company, aren't we?
We are. Peter first, then Ken.
Yeah, Jack Heath at the very beginning of the day. There's some well-heeled, well-known broadcasters on this station. Yeah. That's really cool.
Very cool.
Indeed. So. Well, this show is starting too early for me today because I did not finish my Midtown Cafe tomato soup, which is fabulous. I mean, it's a good soup day.
It looks good.
As you mentioned, I look at the texture of it. And I just know that it's homemade, you know, with probably an immersion blender or something. It definitely is not out of a can, of course, because the salty, the sodium taste that gets left in your mouth is not there.
You know, speaking of tomatoes, okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to eat while you're talking.
You go right ahead. Because, you know, I found this very interesting article because you just said tomatoes. And I don't know what Brittany uses upstairs. My guess is she uses fresh tomatoes because we do get.
I was thinking about that. Okay.
We do get fresh tomatoes. But the simple trick that makes canned tomatoes taste amazing.
Oh, there's a trick to this?
There is a little trick. Oh. And, you know, I shouldn't say that. I do use canned tomatoes, often, but
I think most people do.
Yeah, they probably do. But this is a little trick. And, you know, I read the whole thing and it makes sense. First, roast your canned tomatoes. Get the whole canned tomatoes, drain the juice out.
Okay.
Put it on a cookie sheet, 375 for about an hour and a quarter, and they will roast and they will caramelize, giving it much more flavor.
Because there is some sugar in tomatoes.
All right. Much more flavor. Mm. And then either, you know, from that point, either, you know, smash them for a tomato soup or a sauce or, you know, whatever you're going to use them for. But it says it's much more flavorful. And
interesting. And you won't get that metallic taste.
Exactly.
It's funny. I think your dad mentioned something about that because he was talking about making sauce a week or two ago, and I think he may have mentioned something about that.
He didn't say roast them, though.
Yeah.
We were talking about fresh tomatoes, but then he said canned tomatoes in his recipe.
That's
we
called him on.
We're like,
George!
What? But yeah, I don't think that he roasted them, but this makes a lot of sense, I think.
I'm
probably going to try that next time I make a tomato soup. And you know, really, when you think about it, because I was thinking about tomato soup, because that is probably one of my favorite soups. You can probably make that healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, tomatoes, I'd probably mince up some onions with it too, saute that a little bit before the immersion thing, roast the tomatoes, a little garlic pepper, and then a little bit of fat-free cream. A little bit. Don't even really need a lot.
No, you don't.
You know? That would probably be really good.
900 Degrees, the pizza place here, and now they have another one in
Epping,
yes, that you can see from 101. They made a really, and I don't think they do it unless once in a while they might. They put a little roasted corn in there, and they also top it off with basil, and it was really, really good.
Now, see, I'm going to make that.
Yeah.
It's all stuff I can
eat. It's just a slight upgrade, but man, it really rocks. This is really good.
I'm going to try that.
You know, I know you shouldn't put crackers in your soup, but I needed to get a little bit of crunch. But mine have been in here so long, they're the size of marshmallows. Look like I have tomato soup with marshmallows
That's
in them
funny.
Right now.
Speaking of marshmallows, aren't we supposed to get some marshmallows delivered to us?
I think so, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see them. I'm dying to see what they look
like. You're referring to
Nalima. Creative Kitchen.
She's becoming part of a business, partnering with one of her clients. This is a place where people who have small food businesses come and actually use her commercial kitchen at a very low price. And they have come up with this marshmallow that you, that actually takes a photograph. You know, it's somehow, I don't know how they do it.
Like you put them on cakes.
Yeah, it's the same idea.
Kind of like a screen printing your
marshmallow. And they're a couple inches square, and they're flat, so they're not big and puffy, but they are marshmallows.
Wicked cool.
And they're great for wedding favors, and I think she was alluding to the fact that she was going to put our pictures on some of these marshmallows. So maybe the Board of Health said, no, better not put those guys' pictures on.
Oh, brother. Yeah,
this
probably
could be
banned it.
A big problem, that's for sure. Speaking of craziness in the world of food, my favorite food source is foodbeast.com. And I know that we have talked in the past about various fair foods, you know, like deep fried Snickers.
I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
Some kind of bar.
Yes.
The yogurt bar?
You're on the right track. The Southern California-based restaurant known for deep frying heck out of everything at California State Fairs will now be doing it too. Slim Fast Bars. Seriously, people? His bar of choice is the Chewy Chocolate Crisp Slim Fast Bar, which he will dip in pancake batter, deep fry, much like the Oreos, powder it with sugar, and drizzle it with chocolate syrup.
So, okay.
This is your worst nightmare, Carol Lawrence.
I mean, what is the sense in doing it with a Slim Fast Bar?
Well, it's because it gets you publicity, and there will be people that will want to try something different. I'm sure there are aficionados of fair food that is dunked in pancake batter,
oh my gosh,
deep fried, powdered with sugar, and then drizzled. Just like I tried the Oreo cookies at the Hopkinton State Fair last summer, and wasn't that thrilled about it, because not that I didn't like the flavor, but it was too mushy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I wanted some crunch, and I guess you're not going to get crunch when you deep fry something, but it seems like you could if you did it right.
Did you ever try chocolate-covered bacon?
No. There was actually a booth that had that.
Yes.
I did not try it.
That's where I had it at the Hopkinton Fair.
Yes.
And it is, I love chocolate, and mm-hmm. I love bacon. I mean, who doesn't like bacon?
Yes.
It was gross.
Was it?
It was. Oh, and you know, I mean, maybe there could be some upgrades to that. You know,
I
mean,
I would
the bacon
think so.
That they use, probably it wasn't like the best bacon.
Right.
I don't think it was cooked enough. I mean, I would kind of think it would need to be crispy before you
I
put
would
the
agree
chocolate
with
on
that.
It
yeah.
was.
And then you
I
would
mean,
dip it in like fountain chocolate, wouldn't you? That would dry pretty quickly.
I would think it. Mm-hmm. It was gross. Mm. It was really. I couldn't even eat it.
Well,
but anyway,
I think when you get it at a fair and they're cranking them out and they got you know people who are. Probably not experienced where it doesn't matter. It's a volume. When you do it at home and you can buy a little bit better bacon and a little bit better maybe dark chocolate, then I can see that probably it's really, really sinfully good.
I guess.
You got to give it another chance, Carol. When you're in a cheating mood, which you know the only cheating that I'm aware of that you have done is a little bit of wine on your vacation. Everything else, though, you either haven't confessed or you've just been extremely well behaved.
I've been very good. And yes, I've had my few drinks here and there.
Sure. Well, you know what? If it helps keep you happy, and it, you know, clearly you're wearing new clothes that you haven't worn in a long
mm-hmm.
time. So Rocco
mm-hmm.
seems pleased. He's
mm-hmm.
like your star pupil. So here's another fun food fact off the hot wires of Food Beast. Costco, you know, the big box store that sells in huge amounts. What am I going to talk about?
Pizza.
No.
Oh, okay.
Costco has been selling rotisserie chickens, like a lot of stores are, the whole rotisserie chickens, for a while now at $4.99. At $4.99, it's one of the cheapest offerings of ready-to-eat whole chickens around. Turns out that the $4.99 price tag is costing Costco millions of dollars. And the story says they just don't care.
You're kidding.
Richard Galanti, chief financial officer at Costco, recently spoke to the Seattle Times about Costco's consistent chicken pricing. According to the Times, Costco loses about $30 to $40 million every year in chicken prices because they refuse to raise them higher than $4.99. While competitors are charging $6 to $7 per chicken, Costco has been adamant at keeping it at just $5. This seems to be a practice that reaches all the way from the deli to the food court, where the price of hot dogs, sodas, and pizzas are cheap and consistent. Costco is reported to have sold 76 million rotisserie chickens in 2014.
Well, you know, I do have to say, when you're reading that off, all mm-hmm. of those items, you know, deli, the hot dog and all that, Market Basket's the same thing.
It is.
Market Basket's rotisserie chicken
right.
is $4.99, and
right.
you cannot go wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's as big as the – I saw the pictures of the ones from Costco, and they look to be bigger. The ones okay. you get are not that big from – I mean, you'd be lucky to get a pound of meat off those because I regularly strip them when I'm making chicken pot pies from scratch, and sometimes you got to scrape everything to get a pound. Or even a little bit more.
I was using when I was doing my jar things before I'm on this strict meal plan.
Yeah, go ahead and take a sip.
I know. Just habit.
I know. I feel like we're at a bar. You know, go ahead and take a drink, Carol.
It's my shake. It's my protein shake.
It is. And I still insist that it looks so good. Probably better than it actually is. But
It's actually very, very
yeah.
good. I love that. I really do.
But back to chicken. Rotisserie chicken is like the go-to thing.
It is.
To have in your fridge. Make chicken salad with it.
It's fairly healthy, too.
Pie.
I mean,
yeah,
your protein.
I'm making pizza
it's...
tonight for dinner, and we were going to say, oh, let's have a leftovers night. I know. I'll get out of because I make frozen dough, put it in the fridge. So we're going to have our leftovers on a pizza crust tonight.
That's like ideal.
Chicken included.
Yeah, it's ideal. I think that's great.
Fantastic.
That's great. Did you know what Friday is?
This coming Friday?
Is it in your comedy cold cuts maybe?
No, tell me because I haven't prepared those yet.
Ah, it's National Donut Day.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Dope! We'll have to see if I've got some Homer Simpson skits or something
because
he's the donut guy.
Yeah. And Krispy Kreme is going to be giving out free donuts for anybody
yeah.
that walks in the door.
I don't want to say for sure, but I think another major chain, and I won't say the name because I'm not positive on this, is doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So, National Donut Day is Friday, huh?
Yep, Friday. So,
well,
that was kind of interesting.
Well, there's no Krispy Kremes in New Hampshire. Remember when all of a sudden Krispy Kreme, that's all you heard about, they put one up in Medford? And I think they were planning one in New Hampshire.
I
don't
think they were.
It may have opened, but then Krispy Kreme just sort of went away.
It kind of did.
The only place I've seen them at Mohegan Sun
Me
Casino,
too.
Right?
Don't you love it when the light's on and you know they're making them?
Yeah.
That's what they do. They put the light
know.
On. I think that's so cool.
Have you ever been, though, to a non-casino Krispy Kreme place? And while you're standing in line, the conveyor belt of the dough is going by, and then it, like, takes a little bath into the oil. And then it comes back up on the production line. And by the time you get up to the window and it's your turn, you watched your donut being made, basically.
So good.
It's
nothing like a warm donut like that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
I just like plain donuts.
Yeah.
Like a good plain donut. Yum.
Well, because they're basically so bad for you,
yeah.
I kind of pick and choose the ones that I'm going to want to eat as well. I love the pumpkin donuts that Dunkin' Donuts makes every year.
I like Boston cream, too.
Boston cream, yeah, they're good.
Yum.
I'm making a list of all these things that I know you like that someday, in a weak moment, I'm going to say, here you go, Carol. I wouldn't do that. Daryl did that to you with the creme brulee on vacation.
Little stinker.
I will not do that to you.
Creme brulee. There was something else he did, too, and I looked at him, and I'm like, really? Really? But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Bart makes a great tiramisu. That's a really fun type of dessert to make. A little later on here in the program, in fact, just a couple of moments, we'll be talking to the director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. This is Dairy Month. And, boy, there's no shortage of things to talk about with Amy Hall. She'll be joining us by phone in a couple of moments. Also, an author of a new cookbook that I think so many people can relate to. It's called the New England Open House Cookbook, Sarah Leah Chase, who has lived in Maine and Nantucket and Connecticut for a while and now lives on the Cape, will be joining us. We'll talk recipes
cookbook
with her.
Cookbook is beautiful, too.
It really
sent
is.
Sent us a couple copies, and it's very nice.
It took her about 5 years to get it all together, and the work definitely shows the effort. And I think that our friend Shelley Walcott, who has a wonderful spice blend business, has an announcement to make on who wins the contest. Was it an essay contest or what exactly?
A recipe contest.
A recipe contest.
Recipe contest.
Well, and it was using her product, I think.
Yes, it was using Healthy Spice
And it was blends. a nationwide contest.
Pretty sure Lauren, the winner, is
going
to be calling. I want to say it's Wisconsin.
Okay, so we're going to have both of them on?
We're going to have both of them on at the same time.
So we have a busy day, correct?
We do.
All right, then we need to get right to it.
And then Make-A-Wish will be
Oh, good. That's right. Finish things
well,
off.
So. We probably should get going.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Right?
Okay. Break time.
All right. You're listening to Food for Thought, 107.7 The Pulse, WTPL-FM, powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Following mid-morning madness, mid-morning meltdown, although I think probably the words can be interchanged, but for branding purposes, mid-morning meltdown, Peter St. James. Following him every day, it's Carol and Mike on Food for Thought, brought to you by Puerto Vallarta Mexican Grill on 2nd Street in Manchester. Authentic Mexican at incredible prices. And Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford and Londonderry. IntegrityFit.com, your coaching solutions company. Very happy to welcome on to Food for Thought somebody I met years ago, prior to actually working at the same station now, Amy Hall, director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. Very busy time of the year for her for one reason. It is Dairy Month. And Amy Hall, welcome. Is it Dairy Month all over the country or just here in New Hampshire?
Oh, it is. It's nationwide. But before we get into that, Mike, you're selling yourself short. You entered our mac and cheese bake-off, and you won the most creative exotic category.
it was my dessert first mac and cheese, and thank you for that, which had apples mixed in, and on the top it was a crumb topping, sort of an apple cinnamon flavor crumb topping, and people thought, how could that be good? But when you think about it, here in New England, people love to put cheddar cheese on a hot slab of apple pie, which I never heard of coming from Michigan, but Barbara insisted that it was a good combination. So thank God I listened to her once in a while.
That was pretty brave of you. And obviously it worked because you won. So, and I remember tasting that. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, mac and cheese with apples, but it was very good. It was good.
I have since collected a couple of different books about mac and cheese that are out there, and so I'm getting ideas. I took a couple years off just because I had so much going on, Amy, but I think I'll be back in. I'll have game again next January.
That's what I like to hear, Mike Moore. We need some more competition in there. The more competition, the better. That's what I say at a bake-off.
Well, I'll tell you what, I found the competition got a little stiffer as the years went on because it got so popular, there were more entries, and you had to move it from the Holiday Inn to the Grapponi Center, and are you moving it to the Verizon next year?
Oh, geez, you know, that was actually a consideration for a time period there, and then we made the decision that this has become, this bake-off, a very intimate community type of setting and event. And a lot of people really didn't want to see it move to such a large arena. And then in Manchester, they have some pretty strict health codes. So at that point, then our bakers would have to get individual food licenses. They'd have to cook it on site. And as it is now, they put a lot of time and effort, as you know, into entering this contest and, you know, coming up with that perfect recipe. I know some of our returning bakers, I've heard from people that they're actually start testing the macaroni and cheese that they're going to enter in October just so they can make sure they hit the nail right on the head and come out of it the winner. They take it seriously. Ice cream and mac and cheese, you don't mess with people when it comes to those two foods.
This is true.
Yeah.
So, Amy, this is Carol here. How are you?
I'm great, Carol. How are you?
Very good. Very good. So what happens in Dairy Month? Like what, you know, I did go through the website, so I do know a few of the things that are happening. But what, like overall, like what is like the buzz?
Well, just to give you a little history here, Carol, June Dairy Month actually started out as National Milk Month in 1937. And that was a way to promote drinking milk, initially created to stabilize sort of dairy demand when production was at a surplus. And milk is a commodity, and not a lot of people understand that. So the pricing on milk is variable, as it is with gas or oil or any other type of commodity. And when the country goes, what we say in the industry, is long on milk, meaning production is far surpassing consumption and purchases of milk. The dairy industry decided in 1937 that, you know, we really ought to band together and try to find a way to promote milk consumption. You know, there were other alternative beverages hitting the market at that time. So all of a sudden, and I work from the dairy industry, and I can say this wholeheartedly, and it still applies today, milk lost quite a bit of market share starting right around the 1930s because of that. You know, it was always a staple at every meal. It's just what you had, you know, from your great-grandparents, you know, to your grandparents, to your parents. So we really did lose a significant amount of market share, and that's when National Milk Month started. it's just a great way, and it's since evolved, and, you know, so many different dairy organizations, you know, diversify the way they celebrate this. Here in New Hampshire, it's our Meal Time is Milk Time campaign, and really highlighting the importance of your family-owned dairy farms here in New Hampshire. They've been operational for generations, and milk is very much a local product. So there's so much to say about these wonderful people and such a healthy, wholesome product, you know, that we struggle as an industry to get the information out there, because our budgets, we can't even come close to the soda and the juice companies and some of these alternative beverage companies. They're working with, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to be able to market and promote their beverages. And we're sort of lagging behind. And as a result, we're seeing fluid milk consumption drop significantly. So since 1937, the trend, unfortunately, just gets lower and lower and lower year after year. So that's really what we try to combat in June Dairy Month.
Well, I have to confess that while you're right about that, the National Milk Producers Association, or whatever they call themselves, has come up with some brilliant campaign branding over the years that probably helped the Milk Mustache campaign, which still gets some play, and the Got Milk question. Those are two brilliant ideas that I think have probably helped keep milk at least somewhat competitive with the other branding competition.
Well, it has. And, you know, one of the things we're seeing is, believe it or not, that Got Milk campaign, which I don't think that will go away, you know, for at least another couple generations, because that was brilliant marketing. It really got drilled into the brains of people. But they've since replaced that Got Milk with something called Milk Life. So it's kind of a double entendre in terms of, you know, you milk life, you make the best of it. And then milk, of course, sustaining a healthy, happy life. What we've run into in our biggest issue in the industry, you know, despite a lot of really phenomenal and brilliant marketing ideas, it just comes down to straight business competition. And where can we do better and how can we do better? I mean, milk has always been healthy. Milk has always been natural. You know, it's not created in a lab. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not a huge fan of drinking things that look like a liquid glow stick. You know, that's been snapped into a bottle. You know, it's just not my cup of tea. And I'm not, you know, I'm also not interested in drinking other beverages that like to call themselves milk that, you know, they tend to hide behind their health benefits. But what a lot of people don't know is the amount of sodium and the thickeners and the process of having to derive that into some sort of manipulative marketing campaign that says, oh, we're healthier than milk, we're better than milk. I find that once consumers really dig down, they find out that really that's not the case. And just getting to, you know, back to the marketing portion, which is what I do, you know, I hate to say it, I kind of have to take my hat off to them because they've run us right over. So the industry is struggling despite brilliant marketing campaigns. And, you know, with Milk Life, this is a new way to sort of re-energize the campaign and get people more involved in drinking milk again.
For those of you tuning in, you are listening to The Pulse. We're talking with Amy Hall. She's the director of the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And, you know, I have a question because I have a son. He's 20 years old, going to be 21 soon. And he was a strict vegan for many years, and then he goes from vegan to vegetarian. He is like, what do I say to him when he, you know, he obviously doesn't have dairy, and, you know, he says how bad it is for you and, you know, all this stuff. What do you say to that?
Well, I have two approaches, Carol, and that's a really good question because we do run into a lot of that. Is that there are two types of people, and, you know, I can't speak for your son, of course, but what I have to do is make a decision, you know, who can I chat with in terms of who's open to education? And then you always have the people that it doesn't matter what you put in front of them, they're just not going to care and they're not going to change their stance or their opinions. So, you know, depending on where your son falls on that spectrum, in terms of the health benefits of the product, for me personally, I've found that when I increase my consumption of dairy products, my weight is more manageable. My athletic performance is much, much better with chocolate milk. You know, it contains calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, potassium. You know, the calcium in milk is readily absorbed by the body. Phosphorus plays a role in that absorption. And it's just needed in terms of full, healthy nutrition. It is the most, a lot of people call this, the most perfect beverage on earth. It starts in nature with the food that cows eat. It never touches human hands. So from farm to plant, processing plant where milk is processed, you're getting milk that is fresh. You know, it's only 2 days old. Additionally, we're seeing a huge rise since milk consumption has dropped in calcium and vitamin D deficiency in children. And this is going to become an epidemic as they grow older. And this leads to sort of dangerous health implications. And milk, like I said before, it's always been healthy and it's always been healthy. I guess for you and your son and the conversation to be had is, you know, what are his objections, first of all? Let's identify what those are and address them individually. Because a lot of the studies out there, you know, I've read studies before, you'll see the headline, you know, and it's shocking. You know, it'll say milk causes cancer. And everybody, oh, what do you mean milk causes cancer? I'm done with milk. I'm not drinking milk anymore. But what people don't do anymore, and this drives me nuts, is they don't go to the bottom of that article and see where the research was done. What were the controls on this study? I even saw one, and it still cracks me up today. It was a study that did not eliminate smokers from these studies. So you kind of have to say, was it the milk or was it 35 years plus of smoking two packs of cigarettes a day? So there's a lot of miscommunication out there. And so it's just about finding out where your son falls in that spectrum. And, you know, is he open, you know, to hearing outside information outside of what he reads as a vegan?
Well, I cannot wait to tell him that I spoke with you today.
Well, send him my way. I'm always open. You know, whether you're vegan or you're vegetarian, you know, I'm always open and I welcome questions and I love the light bulb moments. You know, you sort of see people light up when they ask you a question and they say, you know what? That really makes sense to me.
Right,
so
right.
Antibiotics, that's a huge issue, right?
Yeah.
There's antibiotics in milk. Well, what a lot of people don't understand is, no, it's illegal. It is 100% illegal for milk to contain antibiotics. And where this thinking was precipitated was some companies out there had this brilliant idea that we're going to put the label on our milk that says antibiotic-free. Now, what does that do to the brains of consumers? You see a milk brand that says antibiotics-free. Well, automatically, that suggests that other milk contains antibiotics, right? It's a logical conclusion you would make. So we kind of hurt ourselves in that. I mean, some of the larger milk brands sort of hurt the entire industry by labeling it that.
It's really interesting. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish up that thought.
No, go ahead, Mike. Go right ahead.
Well, as I'm listening to this conversation with you and Carol and some of the issues that you as a marketer are challenged with, it's hard to believe that something so natural, essentially, when you think about it, is the lightning rod for so many discussions. I mean, we haven't even touched about the raw milk debate. We haven't, we've just so many different things. You mentioned the antibiotics. I believe that, I think even though you kind of shot the whole industry in the foot, I thought that was brilliant with, I think they're in Maine, the brand that started doing the no antibiotics in ours. So it's, man, I tell you what, you got your hands full in your job. And then there's the challenge of continuing dairy farming in the state. The high price of land is a challenge, is it not, for somebody wanting to get into dairy?
Oh, absolutely. You're not going to see, and you can quote me on this, you're not going to see new dairy farms emerging here in the state. You know, they're competing with, you know, a lot of development. Is the land as viable as it should be here in New Hampshire for dairy farming? And to your point, the acreage and the available land, it's certainly a struggle. And the farmers that are already established, they struggle with what they're paid. Again, milk is a commodity. And while you see it adjusting for you as a consumer in the store, it adjusts drastically for dairy farmers. They're paid by every 100 pounds of milk they produce. So if you can figure that a gallon weighs about 8 pounds, you do the math there. And last year, they were making a good amount of money. They were making about $25 per every 100 pounds of milk they produced. Well, this year, if you remember when I was talking about going long on milk, the market got flooded again. And what happens then is because it's a commodity, dairy farmers see milk prices now at $15, $16 per hundredweight. What does that mean? That means that every dime that's coming in, they're just breaking even. There's no profit here. So when people say, why are small farms going out of business? Where are they going? Why aren't they moving in? Why aren't we seeing more dairy? Well, that's like me, you know, my board of directors saying, Amy, this week, you know, we're going to pay you $100. Next week, $100. And then after that, we can't really predict what it's going to be. It might be $5,000. It might be a dollar. So it's a difficult industry to sustain. But the good thing is that these are very passionate people. It has to be in your blood. It's in their heart and it's in their soul. And I have never seen a more community-driven group of people in my entire life.
We need to take a break, right?
We do.
Can you hang in for another couple minutes?
Oh, absolutely. I could talk for days.
All right. You are listening to Food for Thought. We are talking with Amy Hall, the director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. And stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Right now we're talking food on Food for Thought with Carol Lawrence and Mike Morin, brought to you by Red Arrow Diners of Manchester, Milford, and now the drive-thru version in Londonderry, redarrowdiner.com, and Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of the Green Room for Food for Thought and Kale and Company. Our guest for another couple minutes till we round off the hour is Amy Hall, director of Granite State Dairy Promotion. We've talked about a lot of the challenges and a lot of the marketing strategies, but Carol, since this is Dairy Month, I want you to at least have a chance to tell us about Owl Brook Open House, where farmers partner with game hunters. That's coming up soon.
You mean Amy.
Amy, I'm sorry, what did I call her?
You said Carol.
Carol, oh, I'm sorry.
I'm like, what? I'm supposed to know about that? I'm like, wait a minute.
We'll throw that to Amy. So sorry about that. Owl Brook Open House. Can you share a little bit about that and what folks would like to know?
I can. I was excited at first. Is Carol's going to be there?
Awesome. I know.
It's going to be a really great event. Owl Brook Hunter Education Center, it's a place for youth to learn how to responsibly and ethically hunt. So they do a lot of, you know, different types of seminars up there. You know, it's where people who might be interested in beginning to hunt, youth or adult, are able to learn a little bit more about it and, you know, really explore, you know, do they want to get into hunting? You know, what is the process of getting a hunting license? You know, New Hampshire dairy farmers are extremely important. And what I like to say is they're not just milk. They're recreation. They maintain open spaces for wildlife habitat. Their lands prevent erosion, wind control. It prevents, you know, quality control in terms of natural air filtering. So if you're a hunter, you know, if you were to think about, you know, all the dairy farms, you know, that do open their land and keep their land open for recreation and snowmobiling, you name it, it's a really important and dynamic partnership to be able to have with the fish and game. So one of the things that I like to do is really build up these ancillary partnerships so I can hit these different demographics. You know, it's not all about, you know, getting people to guzzle milk or, you know, shove cheese down their throat. You know, it's looking full circle and comprehensively at what this industry means and the true trouble that a lot of different demographics of people and community would have to be dealing with without them. So I'll be up at, you know, Owl Brook Hunter Education Center. You'll find me serving ice cream and also shooting some clay pigeons because that's a lot of fun. So that's just, you know, one of the many partnerships we have. Another one, of course, is chocolate milk is the official beverage of the Manchester Monarchs. It's the official beverage of New Hampshire High School Athletics. So we are gaining some traction. And, you know, I was thinking during the break, I don't want it to be all bad news because we are gaining a lot of traction in terms of our partnership. And, you know, as I mentioned, light bulb moments. We are seeing more people having light bulb moments. There's only, you know, 1% of our population anymore that lives or works on a farm and 2% who work in agriculture. So me, I'm part of that 2%. So it's no wonder that, you know, misinformation is so easily spread. You know, my great-grandparents, you know, if you didn't work on a farm, you at least lived next door to one, or you knew a farmer, or you had a cousin that was a farmer. So you were very closely tied to agriculture, and you understood the process.
Well, you have a lot of other great bits of news to share, the wine and cheese trail. You mentioned ice cream a minute ago. We've got about a minute left. What is the ice cream trail, and how do folks find out more about that as temperatures eventually warm up?
Exactly. That's my pet project. Real quick, the ice cream trail was actually featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal last year, so I'm really proud of that. It's a map, a trail map, that you can pick up at rest areas, your local chamber of commerce, 47 local ice cream shops. And there is a passport program that goes along with this. So the goal here, and 47 shops is a lot. I understand that. I know I couldn't do it. But, you know, you go, you know, you tour the shops and you get a sticker at each shop. And if you're able to hit all 47, your name is entered into a grand prize drawing or raffle, and you just won yourself a local membership to Planet Fitness.
Nice.
I mean, it just seems to be
perfect.
The right thing to do after eating all
that ice cream.
Yeah, well, we are out of time. Amy Hall, Director of Grand Estate Dairy Promotion. Lots of great things to talk about during Dairy Month, and I'm so glad that you spent a few minutes with us today, Amy, because I am a through and through a milk fan, and I love cheese and butter, so you are preaching to the converted here.
Well, thank you. On behalf of the industry and the dairy farmers, I appreciate the invitation.
All right. We'll see you soon, if not in January, for the mac and cheese bake-off.
You got it, Mike. Count on it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.